deal with airplane peanuts.
Welcome to the fourth episode of the Joke World podcast. Today's guest, live from Zoom, our first Zoom interview, all the way out in California, we have Joey Avery.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. And by here, I mean in my room, but with you.
Yeah. Thank you for doing this such short notice. I hit you up last night and we're recording the same day that your guys are going to see this on YouTube. So the editing might be a little quick. But so you're out in California. So far, we've had some New York guys. We've had some Austin guys. And we always kind of touch on people, different styles of comedy. And California is kind of the third piece of that. So you're in San Francisco, correct?
I actually just moved to L.A.
Okay.
But that is just out of, you know, how comedians very often. You start somewhere. You do it there for a long time. Eventually, you move to L.A., New York, now Austin. Mm-hmm. So I just came down to L.A., but in terms of my style, definitely influenced by San Francisco, and that's where I came up for most of my years of developing. Mm-hmm.
So would you say that this was something that was written on the wall? Because you're close to L.A., or closer than, you know, me. I grew up in Cleveland thinking about doing stand-up. Like, maybe I'll go to L.A. one day, maybe I'll go to New York. But you're kind of close. Would you say that this was inevitable? You were always going to go to L.A., and you finally made the jump?
It's a really good question, because actually growing up in the San Francisco Bay Area, I've always had like an antipathy towards L.A. because we have a rivalry. So I've always been like, oh, dude, fuck L.A. I'm not going there. And in San Francisco, it's actually kind of like an actual city. So you can hop around, do multiple shows a night, tons of stage time. It's almost more like the New York of the West Coast, obviously on a much smaller scale. So a lot of me, for the longest time, I thought I was going to go to New York just because I love being on stage, stand-up specific, getting stage time, which is not what LA is known for. But then, you know, my life happened and it made more sense to move to L.A. And a bunch of my, you know, peers who I'd started with in San Francisco all also moved to L.A. And then it just became the obvious choice because I had a lot of things going on down here. And it is easier because I'm close to home and I do love California. So that's why I ended up coming here.
That makes sense. As someone that has never been there, but it hears a lot about it. Is San Francisco as crazy and like absurd as people sound? Like, I feel like there can't be a place that actually exists like this. But the way that, you know, Rogan makes it sound and what I'm hearing, it's like I'd want to stay as far away as I can.
Yeah, no, that's a great question, because if you listen to like Rogan or if you read Fox News articles, everything is like 12 people were shot by two gay homeless people with heroin sticking out of their ass while they were shitting on the street and like fucking a child. And you're like, oh, my God,
an attempt. Never
exactly. And so honestly, like, does San Francisco have its problems with homelessness, things that I would love if the city was able to find a way to improve both for the average citizen and homeless people? Absolutely. But the like fear-mongering and everyone saying it's this like war zone, like honestly, those people are fucking pussies and they don't know the right places to go in San Francisco. San Francisco's the shit. I stand by it. It's not as insane as you think. But it does suffer from the fact that downtown, like the main area, if you don't know where to go and you're just like downtown, it's kind of the worst part. Mm-hmm. But people who live there don't tend to hang out in the Tenderloin as much, even though there's a ton of great comedy shows there. But there's bad parts of it. It's great. And honestly, if you know where to go, it's one of the most beautiful cities in the country and the world.
Yeah, there's bad parts about every city. But for some reason, it seems like San Fran, it makes you think you're going to step off the plane and get stabbed with fentanyl from some like random homeless dude. Like, it's insane.
Yeah.
The worst PR. That might be the worst PR out of any city in the country.
It's because its problems are also like aligned with super left-wing politics. Mm-hmm. So like it's got a bunch of issues and it likes to fly the flag for a bunch of things that if you want to fight against it, it's like a poster boy for
that makes sense.
Where all these problems come from.
Yeah.
But it used to be, you know, people say it's worse than it was a few years ago. But if you talk about what San Francisco was like in the 80s or 90s, like it was like a true war zone. And now there's a ton of like great spots. I don't know.
Yeah. I've only really thought of San Francisco for their teams, obviously, when they're playing one of mine. Are you a Warriors, Niners, what is it, probably Sharks
yeah,
fan?
Yeah, I mean, you're speaking to me right now. yeah, Dubs, Niners, Giants, Sharks, that's the squad right there. I've got a hat for every one of them, like, sitting just to my left.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think I have any issues with any of those except for I hate the Warriors. I moved to Tampa a year ago. I'm from Cleveland, so I'm a Cavs fan, and actually now I guess I don't really mind them, but like when we were in that 4-year stretch of what was becoming maybe the greatest rivalry in sports until Kevin Durant's bitch ass ruined it, I hated the Warriors, dude. Like, I don't know, that 2016 is I'll always remember that, the 3-1. I was dude, I mean, I didn't even like, now I don't mind Steph, but back in the day when he was throwing his mouth guard at our fans and his wife's tweeting that it's rigged, and like, those are the glory days of the rivalry. I hated him. Now I can kind of appreciate how great he is, but back in the day I was tweeting things like, Ray Allen will forever be the best 3-point shooter. Steph sucks. Like,
yeah, just being salty.
Yeah, just shit that makes no sense, but I'm just like, Draymond purposely kicks people in the balls. It's not a basketball move. Stuff like that. But now I can kind of appreciate it more.
Yeah, I mean, we could go on about this, because if Draymond didn't get suspended, which I don't believe should have happened, KD never joins the Dubs.
Yeah.
It would have been a crazy... It is funny. Kevin Durant made the Warriors so unlikable that now that he's gone, people are realizing that they are like a really fun, likable team again without him.
Yeah.
And honestly, I appreciate what he was able to do for the city. He helped us win some championships, but I hope the Nets fail. And
well, they did.
Also, how this is the funniest thing. I love how you're from fucking Cleveland, and you're like, so San Francisco sucks, right?
I know. Well, I'm in sunny Tampa now, so I'm forgetting about that. No, it's that's funny.
The slander, dude. I'm fucking sick of the San Francisco slander. All right, I'm in LA. It has just as bad of a fucking homeless problem as San Francisco, but it doesn't get hit.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, because that's almost the same. People are shitting on LA a lot now. Have you even noticed much of a difference, or how's the move been?
Yeah, the move's been good. I think I said this on stage a couple times, but basically, like, I think LA's homeless problem is just as bad as San Francisco's, but no one here walks. Like, that's just the difference.
Yeah.
Everyone's in a car, so
right.
You just drive by people. Like, you don't think about the fact that there's shit on the street because you're not even on the sidewalk,
mm-hmm.
You know?
But
it's pretty bad here, and I don't know exactly how to solve it, but you know, it's tough.
Yeah. Well, if you ever do figure out how to solve it, let
yeah,
us know.
We gotta get comedy. If I could figure out how to solve it, I would. I'd
yeah,
be doing
we gotta
that.
Get to the bottom of that. That's funny. Yeah. So you know, the big move, and then you're on the road a lot. You said I just missed you. Where were you at? Side Splitters over here.
I actually did. I did Three Daughters Brewing.
Okay.
Brewery in St. Pete. It was their first ever comedy show, actually.
Nice.
So they flew me out to come headline it, and then I did Coastal Creative, which was right next door in St. Pete, through Don't Tell Comedy. But I think they do a lot of Side Splitter stuff.
Yeah.
At Coastal Creative too. So it was all in St. Pete, but it was really
okay.
Fun.
Yeah, it's a good scene around here, because it's not like, coming up, it's not weird to drive a little bit for stage time if you can find it, and having being in Tampa, then also having the Tampa Bay region like St. Pete and all that stuff within 20-30 minute drive, there it's a good little scene down here. You can definitely find, it's definitely better than Cleveland's scene, just a bigger city, I guess. But have you performed in Cleveland?
No, I haven't. I'm sure I will soon, mm-hmm. and I do look forward to it. I find that places that are off the beaten path, not that Cleveland's the boondocks, but it's not like a top four U.S. city. I feel like those places are always really fun crowds because people are fired up. You're there, you know?
And yeah.
Like, it's always a good time. It's interesting about Tampa. So one thing I always loved about coming up in San Francisco is you have the city, and then you go across the bridge, and then you have Oakland. So you basically have multiple different scenes. Mm-hmm. Tampa, it sounds like, has that with you've got Tampa, then you have St. Pete, and they're all, I think, it's mini, obviously, in different scales, but it's all miniature versions of what works so well in New York, which is like you have the whole scene in Manhattan, and then you've got you cross the bridge, and then you've got Brooklyn. You've got a totally different ecosystem. You know,
different people have different
politics,
views,
different vibes.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good way to set up comedy. In Cleveland, it was Hilarities is the premier club. And then there was an improv there, but no one really goes there. It was pretty sketchy. It was no one really goes there. And then it was just like a few bars that would have weekly open mics, but they're all on the same street and they're all just like in a actual bar. Like there's just the main comedy club, but then it's just like bar time. So it is nice because I don't know if the bridge is maybe a metaphor or like a literal thing because in St. Pete and all this stuff, but going over the bridge and like finding like a new group in a new area, but still having access to those stages, but they think differently. Their life is a little different. I think that can just kind of round you out maybe as a comic.
Yeah, you want a place that will push you into different types of comedy so it can function as like a microcosm of, you know, the country.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I guess the world. But essentially that's what you want is to be able to, if you can figure out or if you have to learn how to kill at an open mic, a comedy club, and a bar in a super liberal part of town, a more open-minded part of town, a conservative, if you have access to all those things, it'll just make you a better comic. And in the Bay Area, you'd have, I mentioned San Francisco and Oakland, but there's also tons of like, you know, you've got super city rooms and then you go outside of it just a little bit and you can be in the Santa Cruz Mountains where people are, it feels a lot more like the middle of the country, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
an
yeah.
old biker bar and people have, you know, they don't want to hear your city manicured set. So that's all super valuable.
So that is kind of how it has always been coming since comedy has started, people going on the road, having to, you know, tailor different audiences. Now with comedians constantly uploading clips, burning material or crowd work, which you do a lot of, and I'd like to talk about that later, but that seems like you can get the whole countries are a bunch of different pools or a bunch of different viewpoints. All those people are seeing, you know, the same clip. It's almost like being in a room with the whole internet at once. Do you find that you can kind of fast forward through that process of maybe working out different material in different rooms because the internet is such a big test pool? Or do you ever worry about putting up certain clips for and offending certain audience, or maybe not offending, but you know, just being like people saying shit if it's a political joke or something? Like, how is the internet and opening up your room to not just the people there watching your stand up but to everyone, how has that kind of changed things?
That's a very complex question because I think the results of that we're kind of in a test tube for right now. I think where it will probably push comedy is actually the opposite direction. Because I think even though you get exposed to more people and you might get a bunch of hate and a bunch of love all in the same thing and you get to see where people are coming from, I think the internet tends to push people more towards hyper-pleasing one specific group.
Yeah.
And then and that's when you really go viral.
Yeah.
So, like, I post a lot of crowd work stuff because I am trying, maybe this is still an old school perspective, but I'm trying not to burn a ton of my material.
Right.
I like crowd work, and those are one-off moments. I'm like, that'll never happen again. Fucking throw it out there. So if you just watch my shit online, you'd think I'm a crowd work comic. Mm-hmm. Not the case. It just happens to be what I post. I also have stuff coming. Like, I save my material for I'm doing something on Comedy Central. Like that. All right, now I'll give you my jokes. I'm not just going to go fuck around for that.
Yeah.
But like one of my most successful jokes that I've posted recently on TikTok was a pretty, it was a joke, but it was a pretty straightforward opinion that really only pleased one side of the abortion debate.
Uh-huh.
And that went super viral because people can argue about it on there.
Yeah.
And then it gets more views. So like, unfortunately, I think that you'd think the internet, oh, you have access to everyone, it'll bring people together, it'll make your comedy have to stand the test of pleasing everyone.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, that's true. But I think for a lot of people, they're going to realize that they get most of their love when they stick to one side and please them and incite debates online and watch their views go up while they set fire to the comment section, which is not a good thing. But people respond to strategy. I think that's what's going to happen.
That's like how Facebook's whole algorithm was showing you stuff that you disagree with because you're going to comment more, then you're getting fights and the comments will drive up the algorithm. I don't know if that's maybe you post controversial shit just so you know that people will fight in the that's just so interesting.
It's tough. I mean, like, I guess maybe one potentially positive angle you could take that is your stuff will resonate if it's good, if it's funny. But the thing that I've been learning is it's not just about being good and funny. It's like, does it make people feel some type of way?
Right.
And you don't necessarily have to do that in a shitty or a political way. You can do that in it's super relatable or it's shining light on a feeling that they feel like hasn't been expressed. I don't happen to go to therapy, but I see therapy shit does insanely well on TikTok. So it's not all just politics, but like, can your joke be funny, you know, well structured, but can it also make people like feel something?
Yeah.
I think that's another angle.
That's definitely something that I feel like people would be seeking, in the room and on the apps, is some relatability. But you mentioned the thing about some people might think you're just a crowd work comic if they saw your social media. That's how I first saw you, was just a really funny crowd work, reel, I think, on Instagram. And that's so weird because I feel like crowd work, everyone wants to burn it or upload crowd work because it's not burning any material, because it's like not necessarily prepared, or it'll never happen again, like you said. But also there's something about the authenticity of crowd work. It's the same reason that podcast clips, I think, go viral more than written stand-up clips nowadays, is because you know that that wasn't written, you know that that just happened in the moment. And for people in the audience, it's, I mean, there's tricks and there's things that you can do to get good at crowd work, but for the average person in the audience, like, it's so impressive, and it almost feels like a magic trick to watch you like learn someone's job, and then as they're saying it, already have a joke about that job coming back at them, or the city that they're from, or like a weird developing situation in the crowd that you're going back to. Like, those clips just are more enjoyable, I think, for online than a setup and a punch.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. There's something about you too that just jumps off the screen, because like you said, there are tricks for crowd work. I personally, maybe someone can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think I'm using any of them. Like, I think my best moments are something just happens, and in the moment I just like feel something, and there's like a little extra twinkle in your eye when something clicks, and I'm experiencing a joke for the first time, just as the person in the audience is, just as the person on the phone is. Like, we're truly sharing this moment.
Yeah.
Whereas well-written stand-up is, I think, it's a higher art form. It's more interesting, especially if you're sitting for an hour. You want to know what someone thinks about something that they've worked on, that's been tested. And it's, you know, hopefully you're giving someone something more thoughtful with that. But with crowd work, it's just like, whoa, what's happening? It is an authentic moment. And I think authenticity will always win online, beyond anything else. Like, and if you can just live in, like, I honestly think about that, it almost makes it seem like these days you need to actually be almost an authentic person, like through and through your life, or else the internet will find out about something that you've done or lied about and then fucking hate you and tear you apart no matter what. Like, I feel like you need to be authentic on screen and in your life all the time now.
Yeah. That's a good point. Do you remember the first time you you ever did crowd work? Because I assume the first, I mean, very first few times going up, you definitely had some things written that you were going to say, because it's very nerve-wracking getting up for the first few times. And crowd work as a beginner comic seems so intimidating, because the number one thing is I don't want to have nothing to say. You know, it's almost like doing a podcast for the first time. It's with someone that you just met, like right now. It's like, all I want is that we get through this, it's fun, and that there's no time where for 2 minutes I wasn't just sitting here blushing like I have nothing to say. I mean, you know. So like, do you remember the first time ever trying crowd work?
Dude, I actually don't, because I don't remember ever trying to do it. Like, it was always It was always a reactive thing.
Yeah.
So I think it was mostly like doing shitty shows and then being halfway through this like really long, pedantic, overwritten bit and just like fucking panicking and being like, this is not going to work. And then just like having to be like, what the fuck's going on with you? Or like,
yeah,
someone drops a glass in the audience and I'm like, oh, thank God, I have something to react. It was always like more reactive than trying to go out and seek it out.
Yeah, that makes sense. There's definitely a fine line between reacting and starting talking a conversation with someone in the crowd and then a heckler handling a heckler. Have you had any of those moments, and have any of those increased because people see you online and they think, oh, he enjoys fan interaction. This guy, he'll let me say some stuff in the audience.
Yeah, I don't think I'm big enough yet that people have like bought tickets to come fuck with the shows, and so hopefully that doesn't happen, because like I said, I really like it to be reactive and natural.
Yeah.
But that is something that can happen. I talked to so Andrew Schultz did a crowd work special, and I was doing shows with him pretty soon after he did that. Mm-hmm. And he basically was like, oh, I need to actually stop doing crowd work for several shows because I've over-indexed the audience towards that, and I want to bring them back into knowing that I do material. So you do really have to be careful about like training and managing people's expectations. But I haven't had too many issues with it. There's a phrase that was passed down. I don't remember where I heard it. I certainly didn't come up with it, but it's kind of a comedic maxim with hecklers, which is if someone's really disrupting the show, like, you want to give them enough rope to hang themselves.
That makes
sense. The phrase.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's basically like, let them be annoying before you jump down their throat. There's way too many comics who've been told, oh, I can just shit on a heckler. And so the second somebody does, like, even well intentioned, does something out of school, they're like, what the fuck is wrong with you? I'm going to fuck your mom. And you're like, oh,
yeah, my God. Yeah. Yeah. And because a lot, like, that's, I'll see a lot of sets where someone will yell something out real quick, and they're obviously trying to get involved, and it's not even rude, and the comedian will just move right past and pretend like they never heard it because they're just in the middle of their show, and it didn't disrupt anything, and it was obviously someone just trying to be like, I'm adding in the show, and they'll yell out some shit like a celebrity name, Pete Davidson, and they're like, they'll just keep going.
I really think most people are incredibly well-intentioned, although probably also incredibly drunk. And so, like, the first, like, I really try and, like, instruct people and let people know, like, hey, like, don't do, like, it'll, you know, these things will happen naturally. Like, don't, you know, push out, or I'll just, like, you know, dismiss them and try and quip on them real quick. But sometimes it gets out of hand. But it's very rarely is it done with any malicious intent. And I think that's important to keep in mind, because, like, at the end of the day, if you're doing stand-up, you're kind of throwing the party for everyone there.
Right, yeah.
So you want to make it fun for everybody. And if someone's out of hand, you want to have a light touch, I feel like.
Yeah. It's weird because it's like a party
real quick,
that...
Sorry, just to interrupt you real quick. I have this weird thing where my computer is, like, forcing me to shut down in, like, 2 minutes.
Dude,
and
that's
I see we have
fine.
7 minutes left on the Zoom. Yeah. Do you want to just pause and hop back on?
Yeah, because I was going to say, I was going to wait for it to dwindle down. I didn't know that you could see that. I was going to wait for that to dwindle down and then tell you and be like, I'm not going to pay for this one, so let's hop back on and off. But I'm glad that you said that. Let's take a quick break.
Yeah, we'll hop back on. Yeah, my computer thing hopped up too, so it's perfect.
All right, we're back. It saved me like $7, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Let me get these back going. My headphones, so I don't bleed over.
Sounds good on my end.
Okay, cool. I am back. Great.
All right, we're back after the technical difficulties or whatever you want to call it. The extreme couponing. And so you mentioned working a little bit with Andrew Schultz beforehand, and that's definitely something that, you know, is our, I know my subscribers enjoy his podcast Flagrant too, and he's in a good amount of our edits. I'm sure that they would like to hear about what it's kind of like maybe behind the scenes touring, pre-show, green room, that kind of thing. And that's a super broad question, but
No, I think it's actually, I think it's an instructive question, because I've definitely, you know, the cool thing about getting to work with any of the comics who I've gotten to work with who are further along is you get to learn, you know, maybe what makes them, what sets them apart from the average people that you're working with. And so to give you the green room with Schultz before shows, I'll say this. He does not touch booze before he goes on stage at all. It's super dialed in afterwards. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. We definitely have fun. It can be a really great time. But before shows, he's always locked in. You know, he'll, and also like he'll help. Like we've had joke writing sessions before shows where he'll basically say, this flip isn't working right. Like, what might help here? And you can throw out ideas that you have and be like, is this getting there? And he'll help you. So it's pretty business oriented. Unless there's like a UFC on, then it's very focused on that.
That's pretty cool, actually. And that's kind of how I might have imagined it. I feel like the more you hear about the real details of people, their demeanor before shows, how they approach the stage, as a fan, you just think they're up there, they're having fun, they're having a good time. But the more that I hear about how people approach these shows, it's so business. Like, even like Bert, I've heard him say so many times he doesn't drink before, during shows. Then he'll go back on and be like, I've had one drink or two during a show.
I don't think that's true. I think I haven't seen it, but I'm pretty sure he opens his set by shotgunning a beer.
Yeah, he'll say that. Then he'll be like, I'll have him bring me a water with a lime so it looks like I'm drinking, or I'll have one on the last. He goes, but just the fact that he even pretends like he doesn't drink during the show, I feel like more people handle it. This is flinging around. Yeah. I feel like more people handle it in a business-like manner than... I still have wires in my headphones. It's 2022. That's my fault. I feel like people...
How's San Francisco of you? I think there definitely was a phase of comedy where it was dominated by people who would rack up lines of coke and get hammered and just let it fly out there. Mm-hmm. I think that's harder to do now just because it's so competitive. And I don't know. I think society has changed. I got no problem with doing drugs and partying. But I think just society's attitude towards mental health in terms of doing that shit all the time at your job has probably shifted a little bit.
At your job is
the funny thing is, you know, sometimes being really business-like before the show is what allows you to truly be having fun and relaxed and kind of almost partying during the show. And not to say that means you're like fucked up, but just like a lot of times I've found the more times I've prepared, I'm like truly ready for the show, then you can really get out there and be like, all right, I've done everything, I'm just gonna let myself be free and it's all gonna work out. And so you know, being business-like is not at odds with being carefree on stage,
right? Yeah, and it feels, it's more fun, it's more relaxing and way less stressful to go, because getting on stage in itself is like it's a thing that you have to do. I'm sure the stress gets relieved by the bigger stages, or it may not stress, but nerves, but ultimate preparation is something that can relieve all of that. So then you go up there knowing you're going to kill, and knowing that can make it so much more fun, because you're like, I'm so prepared, I know what I'm saying, I know if this and that and everything else. But you know, just being like kind of carefree or fucked up before the show and not knowing what's going to happen on stage seems a lot more stressful than being dialed in and being like, I know this is going to be great and I'm going to have fun after.
Yeah, I'll give you two things on that. The first is a Jordan quote I read when I was young, which is basically that, where he said that like, he doesn't get nervous when he takes free throws because he knows he put everything into it that he possibly could in practice. Or so whenever a big moment comes, he's like, the ball may or may not go in, but I know that I did everything to make sure it could go in. So what the fuck is there to be nervous about? Because I didn't fuck up. Like, I did everything.
Yeah,
so
we'll exactly. And he's and that's from the second best basketball player of all time.
Oh,
so like,
my God. Get the fuck out of here. That is insane.
It's not insane. I have a bias. Let me live.
you're an LA guy, huh? You like the LA LeBron?
That's different.
But let me give you the flip side of that, though, which is like a ton of the like. Some of the best crowd work clips that you've seen of mine on Instagram, I've been like pretty drunk for. Not like a lot. There are a few times where I've had an event all day and I'm like, well, I'm going to pick up a show that night. And then I go and I'm like, well, I'm too drunk to do my material, so let's just fuck around with people. And something amazing happens. So it's really like you got to figure out what works for you. I don't like being drunk on stage, but I absolutely have done it and can do it. And sometimes it's great. It's not better. I wouldn't do it if I was headlining an important show.
You're right. But or like, touring.
It's kind of fun sometimes. You have a few, you know, a few drinks. You're a little more loose. You experiment more. You go into the crowd. Like it can help 100%.
And people sometimes like that you're drinking because they're drinking, and it's like, I don't know, one of the things that made me like comedy so much growing up is like I like that everyone seems like they're getting after it, like it's a party. I don't know if you saw the Comedy Store documentary, but back in the day when they were going through all those dudes like the Kinison and all those guys, like that was fucking absurd. Like I was like, yeah,
totally. And I'm like absolutely a party guy. Like I love doing it. I was like there have been times where I've been bummed, like I thought comics would party more, you know, but the older I get, the more I'm like, okay, it's a balance. Like sometimes it is party time and sometimes it's very much work time and you know, make sure that you're healthy, and like everything's a balance and everyone's balance is different. But you know, I really like being around comics that push me to focus more and be more businesslike. But I very much get along with comics who are like, let's fucking party, and I'm like, let's go.
That's awesome. I feel like the crowd work with a little buzz going, you know, just wet the whistle a little bit. Yeah. I feel like that might be a little easier. I don't know. Like that Chris DiStefano 9/11 story, he's hammered. He keeps every like three words, he's like, I'm drunk, let's keep going. It's like, this is funny. Like
There is magic to be found there, but you don't want to make it your thing because it's, you can't like bottle it. You can't do it all the time.
Yeah.
And if you're a drunk all the time comic, shit's going to get dark. But yeah. Like, you know,
and it's funnier when it's unexpected or like, because if you were like, I don't think it's as funny as people expect it to be if you were expecting someone to be drunk and then you went and saw them and they're just like kind of drunk and talking and be like, this is kind of weird. But if you were just at a show with a random lineup and one guy was just had different energy and he's buzzing a little bit, it's like, all right, this is fun. But I don't think it'd be that funny to watch like a hammered guy just talk for... No,
not for like a 45-minute set. And that's the thing is people always are like, a lot of people have, even as big as comedy and podcasts and all of this world is, there are a lot of people that go to shows and just have no fucking clue what's going on. They'll literally be like, oh, you guys are always hammered, right? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, it's a hard, you know, there's a relative degree of difficulty to what you're trying to do. Being drunk doesn't necessarily help, but sometimes it does, you know.
And if anything, it can kind of help nerves or just maybe you'll say some things that you might not have usually said. So this has been a lot of on stage content, but some of my favorite things that you do are the little skits or just like videos that aren't obviously stand-up. I guess they would be called skits, but sometimes skits just, I hate that. I hate the word skits. And I hate when people like my parents will call like stand up skits, like on like actual stand up, like your skit. And I'm like,
it's so funny people still use that word, especially in the era of stand up becoming like, you know, like I'd love for someone to go up to Drew Michael after he does like 20 minutes about being like horribly depressed and like wanting to kill himself, and they're like, what was that skit you closed with?
yeah exactly. it's a completely separate thing, and I don't know how people I don't know. Maybe it's just people that aren't that close to stand up.
It is. It's just ignorance. Yeah. It's well meaning, but they just don't know the right words.
Yeah. So how would you go about making your cute little skits versus your
So like the sketch stuff that I do?
Yeah, yeah. Like I saw my amazing interview prep was scrolling through your Instagram and something that really made me laugh. I probably saw it when it was actually posted, but the listening to Rogan back in the day versus now, and just like, because that's something that was so relatable to me because I'm a fan, and I, you know, and it was so much more carefree and like ooh, this is some stuff, this is like not life hacks, but it's like, and not bro science. Well, maybe it was bro science, but exactly, your sketch just summed it up perfectly. But like, yeah, those kind of clips, like, is it more fun to write those, you think, than stand up? Do you do it on a schedule, or is it if a sketch comes to me, I'll film that real quick?
It's a little bit of both, but it's more like an idea will come to me, like that actually hit me, like it was during one of like the crazy like COVID, and I was listening to Rogan, but everything was like super politicized, and mm-hmm. It was just like, it just seemed like everyone who didn't even listen to it had an opinion, and so you were like,
yeah,
you wouldn't want to get caught listening. So I was just driving down, and I was like listening, and I was like, oh, I'm on Spotify, which is public, maybe I should just go to like private session real quick, because who knows, I don't want to have the conversation. And I was like, what the fuck am I doing? Like the fact that I'm going so it was really just a moment that hit me. So you know, like I was talking about, if your content online can make people feel something, I just try and think about what I'm feeling and then like make it and hope that it makes sense to people.
Yeah.
So with you know, an idea will come to me, and then usually I'll just figure out, oh, that's probably more of a sketch than a bit. You know, that's probably
That makes sense.
For example, I actually riffed something on stage that I had a clip of, and I was like, you know what, this would be better as a sketch, and then I just made that sketch today, because mm-hmm. It was about like Instagram mm-hmm. motivational speakers. I was like, this will play more if I just do it as a sketch. So usually it's just where what I think is a better vehicle for the thought that I had. But at the same time, if I know I'm trying to get some videos out a week and I don't have any stand-up clips, or I've been posting a ton of crowd work clips and I want to mix it up, sometimes I'll like sit down and just be like, think, like, let's fucking make something, to just, because I do want to be able to, I want to be known as a stand-up first, which is why I mostly post stand-up stuff, but I really want to always push in different directions, because you really never know what's going to hit online, and I don't want to,
right.
You know, I want to have multiple types of content for people.
Isn't that so funny that nowadays people have to be like known as just such a like one thing or the other, because like I feel like no one comedian stand-ups should be, you know, people post shorts and like sketches and like stuff like that all the time, and you would never say that someone on SNL is not a comedian, but yet the internet's just so like one thing or the other, that if you posted 10 sketches in a row and then went back to stand-up, people would be like, you know, what are you doing? Oh, you're on stage now? Like, that's so weird that you can't just be a funny person, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you can, but...
You can't. Yeah, I mean, but so I've worked with Trevor Wallace, and he's a very funny stand-up, but his dominant mm-hmm. internet presence is sketches. Like, his stuff dominates YouTube, does super well.
Yeah, perfect example.
But you know, his tour he's doing right now is called the Are You That Guy Tour, because people, like, they've seen him. They don't know where they've seen him. They don't know why they've seen him. If they have seen him, a lot of them are shocked that he actually does stand-up, even though he's been doing stand-up the whole time. Guys selling out fucking theaters. So, like, it's just, you do have to... And it even ties back into what we were talking about earlier with, if you just do crowd work, people will think you're just a crowd work person. It makes sense.
Yeah.
That's what they've seen. So... Whatever people know you from is what they're going to... People used to go to Chappelle's shows and just scream, I'm Rick James, bitch. And he's like a brilliant stand-up, you know?
Yeah, right.
So you do have to... You got to lean into what works and what you can put out there, but you do really need to be cognizant of, okay, what type of audience do I want to build? What do I want them to know me as? So that you don't end up in kind of a weird spot where you're trying to tell people, no, this is actually my thing. Like, hey, this is what I wanted you to know me for.
That's so, because, I guess it is just whatever you represent yourself as is, it's not their fault. It's right. Like I just saw Chad and JT at Moon Tower Comedy Festival in Austin, and I had no idea what to expect of their stand. I knew that they were stand-ups because like I'm invested in this community, but like the main thing I've seen from them are sketches or like when they're at court, which is basically, city council meeting.
You'd expect them to go advocate for a Nickelback statue or something. Then it's their job to say like, how can we take what you know us as and shoehorn it into our stand-up? And they do a really good job because their stand-up is in the same mindset and character of everything.
They're still kind of those characters, but it's still about their actual life a little bit too.
But, and they push it a little further than the online characters would. So you do have to be careful. Like you might get pigeonholed into the wrong thing, and it's, you know, it's kind of your fault. Yeah. I mean, we're all just trying to like, at the end of the day, all this started, at least I speak for myself, but I assume the same for you, is like all this started as for me was like, fuck, can I avoid having a 9-to-5 job? Here's this thing that I love. If I can ever just do this, I'll be the happiest guy in the world. So you do whatever works, and you don't look a gift horse in the mouth, but you do really have to be careful about what type of audience you build. And even with doing like really edgy, like I don't like to be filtered. I like to make fucked up jokes. I like to make political jokes. I have a podcast called Pier 69. We push it sometimes. And I think people get it, but you even have to be careful. Sometimes you make a joke and you're like, oh, that's edgy. And then people are like, I fucking love that. And you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
I was kidding. And I feel like you like it too much. And it's weirding me out.
That's funny. That's like a Big J Ogerson joke. He had a joke where he's like, it would be weird for me if I was saying like racist jokes and everyone in the crowd wasn't laughing, if they were just like, yep, nodding their head like yep. I'd be like, what?
This is not a political rally. We're just like, this comedy is you're pushing on the edge. It's funny to say the wrong thing even when you know it's wrong. Like
that's why it's funny,
right?
And that's like it, even in the, so the last Wednesday a week ago was the day after this whole Chappelle thing happened. I can't believe it's only been a week because I feel like we've heard about it so much, which is maybe my fault too, but whatever. And I did a solo podcast after that one, just talking about exactly that incident. And there was a comment that, and I joked around and said my only regret or my only thing I wish was different is that like they could have put him in maybe like a 1-day coma, like just a quick coma, that he doesn't die, but just like maybe it'd be more of a punishment for like a quick coma. Right. And I had this long, long paragraph about, from someone that was like, I've watched all your compilations and your edits and cut ups and stuff, really like this channel, but like it just goes to show like you never know. I can't believe that you would say this, and like I can't, like what's your character like, and like where are your morals? 1-to-2-day coma, really? Like I was like, obviously I don't know this guy at all. The situation already happened. I can't change any of this. I'm just so surprised that that on a channel called Joke World that you would take anything I say seriously at all, let alone like something that I thought was pretty extreme to say.
Yeah, you're gonna get shocking shit. Like you could say the most obviously untrue, over the top joke in that you could be talking about cutting off your own cock, and then someone would be like, I can't believe you're trivializing people who've like chopped off their own dicks. Like,
yeah,
what are you fucking talking about? So there's just too many people out there. There are too many people. I can end it
literally
there.
Too many,
but
people,
like people that's will funny. It'll catch shit on a weird day or whatever the fuck, and they'll take it completely literally, and so for as long as your career lasts, you're gonna look at comments and be like, what in the living fuck is this? This makes no sense. But at the same time, and I try not to look at comments too much, but sometimes you'll read something and be like, maybe I misrepresented this, or maybe I didn't think about it that way. And so I don't know, sometimes you can learn something from it.
You can. Even in that instance, I kind of for a second felt bad. I was like, oh, I don't want anyone to think that I want, but then I was like, oh, obviously
you're like, I'm
no
not advocating
one
for violence. Yeah. Like, you can go back and forth with this person. They're never going to be happy, and you're going to like neuter your entire joke. And so you just got to keep it moving, but it's a data point.
How do you go about keeping keeping yourself grounded while also pursuing internet, fame, internet fame, or just, you know, you want as many comments and likes and as possible on your comedy material and all this stuff. But at a certain point then, while the numbers go up, it seems like people just become numbers and you become numb to just like, this is a real person saying this, or is this just an account? I'm just looking at my phone. Like, have you found that you struggle to keep, like, this in real life, that like even real people are commenting these things? Because at a certain point when there's so many, it just seems like, what even is this?
That's a really good question. I mean, you can't, if you took every single comment as like, an expression of a human form that's worthy of love and light and your attention, like, you would blow your brains out in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Because like, it's just, there's too much hate, there's vitriol, there's insanity. Like, good comments still, like, I'll still get excited, like, oh cool, like, people like this. Bad ones, I'll try and be like, I mean, a lot of times I just brush it off, but sometimes I'll try and be like, is there something to it? Yes, no. If yes, my feelings are really hurt. If no, you are a number, you're an idiot. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
It's tough. You really do have to, at some point, look at it a little bit like a business, and like, you really are, like, especially with all the analytics tools that are online now, like, you really are aggregating your numbers and pitting them against previous performance, and like, wondering if you're doing growth, which is the appropriate mindset for growing a business. But I guess I do really look at it analytically, but where it becomes real for me is like, when enough people follow me and then those people buy tickets, come to the shows, interact with me, and are there for the right reasons and like me, like, that's where the humanity comes back in. And it's like, oh, this is awesome. These people found me. They fuck with me. We're building something together. Like, I think that's the time to think about people as people, and not like, if it's just some random person who wasn't going to like you anyway talking shit. You know, if it's like, the people who want to comment negative shit on your stuff were not going to be your fan anyway. So keep it fucking moving.
Yeah. There's no point of even, you know, working yourself up about that. Are you a big comment deleter or no?
Usually no, yeah. But like, every once in a while, it's like, I don't need it. I don't necessarily need this on my page. Like, I'm trying to get my page out in front of people who are going to like it. So every once in a while, if I see something I really don't like, or it's just not necessary, just.
Yeah.
But
I'll delete an occasional comment, but you don't want to do too many of them. One, because then it gives your fans not a chance to back you up. Like, if you leave one out there that has 10 replies of people being like, fuck off, that makes you feel even better. It creates some camaraderie there. But there's some things that I just don't want, like, the other people to see. Like, if people that might not know me yet or be on the border, I don't want this just to be something that enters, you know. That's why I kind of want to just clear them off. Not because it necessarily hurt my feelings, but I don't want that to be like under this video for new people's opinions to be formed from.
Yeah, it's a business decision, and people online want to be like, oh, we caught you, you're cleaning up.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, it's business. And I think, like you said, like, if I have a funny clapback, I'll do it. I usually don't. I usually just don't interact, let other people handle it, like you said. But yeah, dude, it's a business. There's this weird, like, gotcha idea online of like, you're deleting comments, or you're doing this, or you're doing that. It's like, I'm trying to grow a page, man. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, this is, you know, I'm doing my best. I'm not going to make everyone happy. Like, it's not possible. Especially as a comedian, you're going to piss people off. It's probably a good thing. If you weren't, then no one would like you. But like, it's just, I don't know.
How do you go about, and this might be one of my last questions, because I feel like we're probably reaching the next 20 minutes. But how do you go about, you're saying you're always going to piss someone off if you're doing something right. So in these rooms, you know, what you think is funny is just funny. However, in the last maybe 4 or 5 years, it's been kind of like, people's opinions can carry weight in culture, or cultural value in opinions, or like, if you have the wrong opinions, you're worthless. And in comedy, that's something that I feel like good comedians have not given into, but some have, or some maybe have online or on Twitter, just trying to cover themselves that way. How have you handled this hard time for right or wrong opinions, while also being someone on stage that's supposed to say controversial kind of things?
I don't know. I mean, it's, I think trying, I think,
I just hit record.
Yeah, all good. I think trying to, like, 4D chess your way into, like, the right strategic way to please everybody with your opinion is impossible. So I really, like, try not to overthink it. I mean, I really what I try to do is, like, just do what I think is funny. And then I think the people that will find it will find it, and the people that will hate it will also probably find it and then keep it moving, which is fine with me. But like, I comedy is a hard enough thing to do. I'm just trying to do it the only, like, to the best of my abilities, which is unidirectional. Right. Like, I can only be the most Joey Averyist person that I can be. I don't know if I can strategically, maybe you decide, ah, we should cut that joke. That wasn't even a good representation of me. I stepped over the line, whatever. But, like, I don't know how to strategically do it. I try to just be authentic and come from a good place and at the same time say fucked up shit and push the envelope and say stuff that would work if I was talking to my friends sitting around a campfire off a couple of glasses of whiskey, and not everyone's going to like that, but hopefully more do than don't, and, you know, fuck it. I don't know.
And like, and that's perfect, because that's when – I mean, I won't speak for you, but I feel like most people, like, that's when you found out that you were, maybe not found out, but when you were funny, or when you're used to making people laugh, is like with your buddies at the lunch table in the locker room around a fire, you know, a little buzz going or just whatever. And you're just talking and you're saying whatever comes to your mind. You're not holding back. You're not worried about anything. You're not, you know, worried, you know, they're your best friends and you're just being fucking hysterical. And they're like, dude, that's, you know, running a lunch table can feel better than a whole open mic sometimes.
Oh, 100%.
You know, and that's like, that's, I feel like what my, I mean, from someone at a lower point in this, like trying, I want to not just say what I think is going to be funny. I want to be who I am, like around my friends when it's really funny, not just like made up stories about like, this is my setup and this is my punchline. I want to be just like, and I think that crowd work gives you that opportunity, because that's what that whole thing is basically crowd work with your friends. You know what I mean? It's reactionary, it's conversational humor.
And it can teach you how to write. Like, I think I made somewhat of a breakthrough through doing crowd work, because it wasn't my like super particular written, following a certain path, trying to walk a line where I please everybody, because when I'm at home writing, I am thinking about everyone else and I don't want to do anything that's going to piss anybody off, because I don't really want to piss anybody off. I just know it's going to happen.
Right.
In crowd work, it's just like something happens, boom, you have to be funny in that moment. Yeah. It's authentic. Something happens. And so that can teach you how to even do that a little bit more in your writing. First thing that came to you, like when you're writing and you actually make yourself laugh, you know, you're in the car on the way.
Yeah.
Thinking of, you're like, oh, that could work. That could work. That could work. And then one thing pops you and you go, oh, fuck, dude. Like that's worth the shot. And so you're going to cross the line because you're trying to find it in a way that works. And it is sad that these days that can lead to like death threats and all sorts of things. But you can only try and be a good person and do things the right way. And as long as you're not, like, there is some comedy too that, like, there is shit that crosses the line. I don't think there's not. I've said things that have crossed the line. I think people should be allowed to do it, but there's definitely comedy with malicious intent. There is. So sometimes you read a comment and you made someone feel bad and you're not like, oh, that's just a pussy. Sometimes you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
That actually feels kind of shitty and I wasn't really thinking about it that way. And, you know, that might.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take it down or alter my thing, but, you know, maybe I'll keep that in mind for next time, you know?
Right. I feel like when I very first started, super young in comedy, I was in college, I was 19. And I think what I like, not knowing how to write a joke or how to get on stage, and thank God I was in some small town going on to some very small, like, actual bar stage at the time, but it was just like, maybe I could just say the most offensive thing I could think of, like, not, well, not the most offensive, but like at a certain extent, just like, maybe, you know, what the punchline is going to be is something that is absurd to say in public, because that's how I knew to get a reaction out of people. And that's like what my friends think is funny. So, you know, that's what I'll do now.
Yeah. And that, I think that's the thing is like, I think that's a natural stage of comedy and mm-hmm. people shouldn't be completely judged or raked over the coals for that. But there is also space in society for saying like, you tried that and now you've realized why that's yeah. the most offensive thing.
Yeah.
And it's the most yeah. offensive thing because it offended people and maybe... Maybe you will say. Maybe you'll say, "Fine, I want to fucking ride with that," and then that's your choice. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you go like, "Oh, okay, that was a little yeah. further than the line that I like to be on." You know, obviously mm-hmm. there's a line, right? Like there's things,
right.
there's things in comedy specials from the '80s that like no, like not even the most free speech warrior comic today would say. You know,
right? Yeah.
So. I think all of it gets a little bit murky and there doesn't seem to be a lot of grace on the side of people who want to cancel comedians, but it also sometimes the comedic argument can be a little absurd.
Yeah.
But it's just tough because everyone's line is different, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think basically as long as it's funny, there's nothing worse than an awkward silence after like an edgy joke, because then it's just like as long as it's actually dude. Funny, it plays. I
yeah.
think
like any comic, you go to an open mic and you see a comic and they're like trying to be Jezelnik,
yeah,
but they're
exactly.
just not as, but they're just not as good, and of course they're not. He's an incredible yeah. joke writer, like. But those comics, to get better, they have to wade through some insane shit to, like, try and get to that point.
Yeah.
So, you know, I will always defend comics because I think it's important that we have our, like, our right and our space to explore mm-hmm. shit that no one else is exploring. Otherwise, like, all of society is just... boring. But like sometimes you're like, yeah, it probably wasn't a great take or joke, and I'll defend your right yeah. to say it, but like people are allowed to be pissed as well.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, this was a great conversation. Really enjoyed talking to you, Joey. You want to plug any, this would come out the audio definitely today, the video I'm hoping by tonight, maybe tomorrow morning. So any shows, podcasts, socials, whatever you want to plug now.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned it, but a bunch of my stuff's on Instagram, so that's just at Joey Avery. Joey Avery mm-hmm. comedy on TikTok, Joey Avery on YouTube. I've got tons of stuff up there to watch right now, and then I do a podcast called Pier 69, and I'll be in Austin next week doing the Chubby's Comedy Festival May 20th.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Joey, and you know, go check out his socials, and hopefully we'll hear from you again soon.
All right. Thanks so much.